Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
Iraqis were looking for someone who could actually provide them with good governance, with efficient administration, with anti-corruption, and they couldn't find it.
The thought of scoring in a World Cup final, I mean, and then for it to go to the fifth penalty kick, and then that be me and win the game, I mean, come on. You almost can't write that.
Even Rheingeist is tweeting about this at 1 p.m.
People were lined up outside.
They were taking pictures of people inside.
Yeah, it was wild.
Welcome to this week's episode of the WVXU Discovery Podcast, Start Here. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Get set for a quick overview and sample of three podcasts today, two national and one locally produced, to help you navigate the ever-growing world of the podcast phenomenon. Plus, we're introducing the all-new Start Here Blast weekly e-newsletter. You'll get a personalized email with a podcast we feature on Start Here. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here Blast email from the bottom of the page. Also, now you can rate Start Here on iTunes. And if you're a fan, a 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. So don't forget to rate us on iTunes today. And now, with special thanks for technical assistance from Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and writing research and curation support by Connor Eldridge, it's time to Start Here. First up this week, we're taking a look at a podcast from Public Radio International called America Abroad. As Americans, it's easy to become isolated in our own news stories and political discussions while losing sight of a more global perspective. Well, thankfully, with podcasts like America Abroad, you can stay informed on international issues shaping the world with just the touch of a button. America Abroad is an hour-long audio journey that takes you deep inside an international news story every episode. With a combination of field reporting, expert analysis, and archival historical pieces, host Madeline Brand weaves an intricate and informative account of some of the world's most pressing and important news stories. America Abroad goes beyond regular news reporting, offering not only the facts, but what they all mean. In this example, from an episode of America Abroad called Iraq's Next Steps, it focuses on the recent parliamentary elections in Iraq following the terror of ISIS in both Iraq and surrounding regions. And Brand investigates the new majority coalition in parliament, the political climate, and what's next for the country. In this sample, an expert panel discusses the forces that influence the results of the recent election.
The pro-Western prime minister there, Haider al-Abadi's party, lost ground to the coalition supported by Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. In the coming months, there will be a lot of jockeying as the different factions come together to form a coalition government. Here's our moderator for the discussion, Joshua Johnson, host of 1A on NPR.
Ken, let me come to you. Let's talk about this election. What were the main issues going into it? How much was this a referendum on the prime minister, Haider al-Abadi, and how much was this related to other things?
Well, one of the more interesting things about it, Joshua, I think that we suspected this going in, but the vote itself really made it clear, was where the Iraqi people were on all of this. I think that going into it, a lot of different people had a lot of different ideas about what this election might be about. What the results demonstrated is that for the vast majority of Iraqis, what it really was about was finding a government that could actually deliver services, could provide benefits, get the economy going, and curb corruption. Right? Those were the critical issues. And again, I think all of us knew that this was out there, but different people thought that it might be about defeating ISIS, and it might be about ties with Iran. And instead, it became very much focused on the set of core issues about running the government, about the domestic economy, about the role of corruption.
Ken, I hate to oversimplify this, but it sounds like you're saying people were just voting for a government that could govern.
Well, they were looking for the government that could govern. This is the issue, Joshua, is what we see coming out of it is actually a very fragmented political picture. Everybody's talking about Muqtada al-Sadr winning this great victory. He didn't. This is a very small plurality that he won. And in fact, what we saw was a whole variety of different parties winning more or less similar numbers of seats. And I think that what you really want to take away from that is Iraqis were looking for someone who could actually provide them with good governance, with efficient administration, with anti-corruption. And they couldn't find it. They didn't know who to vote for. And so different people voted for different leaders in the hope that one of them might do it. But let's also remember, in many ways, the biggest takeaway from this election, Joshua, is how many people didn't vote. you had almost a 30% drop in actual voter participation between this election and the previous two.
I did want to ask you about voter turnout, but before we do that, you mentioned Muqtada al-Sadr. Give us the thumbnail sketch of who he is. Very powerful Shia cleric, has had kind of an evolving public image over the years.
Yeah, he's a bit of a cipher, right? I don't think any of us knows really what to make of him. He is the younger child of a very famous Shia family. He wasn't very much before the U.S. invasion of Iraq, but in the chaos that followed, he stood up, he struck a very nationalist figure, was willing to use violence, but also tried to reward and take care of the people who supported him, got very closely tied to Iran and got beat up for doing that. The United States and the Iraqi government really hammered him for that, forced him to redefine himself. And he has redefined himself as very much a kind of arch-nationalist and a champion of the average person, the average Shia in particular, who wanted less corruption, better governance, more efficiency. Right? And ultimately, what we saw in the election was that it looks like Muqtada simply lost less than everybody else, and that allowed him to emerge ahead.
That was America Abroad from PRI. Check out America Abroad for more global stories influencing our world right now. It's available on WVXU's Podcast Central. What if Tom Brady never played quarterback for the Patriots? What if the Dodgers never left Brooklyn? What if Richard Nixon was really good at football? These are the kinds of questions this week's new edition to the Podcast Central Collection asks every week. Upon Further Review with host Mike Pesca is a sports podcast based entirely on speculation. Well, a lot of sports analysis is speculation, of course, but Upon Further Review puts its own special twist on it. The sports minds at Upon Further Review look at some of the most important milestones in sports, a play, a trade, an injury, a ref's call, and imagine how the world would be different if it went the other way. They'll dive into these alternate realities with expert scrutiny, investigating every angle to envision just how important each moment in sports history really was. And this sample from a recent episode of Upon Further Review asks the question, what if the greatest women's sports victory never happened? The episode explores the 1999 U.S. women's soccer victory over China in the Women's World Cup. And despite this triumphant victory, women still struggled and continue to struggle with discrimination, less media coverage, and wage gaps. Upon Further Review dives into what the world would be like without this miraculous win. And sadly, not much different.
When the U.S. women's team came through our town on an exhibition tour the following year, Heather was there again, this time with her guy friends.
We had like bandanas and our faces painted and stuff like that. And like these two guys that, you know, played like pretty high level soccer were just as much in awe of the national team that I was.
In 2004, Heather became the youngest member of the U.S. Olympic team. She was just 19. Here's Steve Goff.
And all this started, you know, back in the 90s. And players like Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy, Tiffany Milbritt, a whole string of players with amazing skills. I mean, the current U.S. team, Tobin Heath is one of the most technically gifted players you'll see, male or female.
Female players weren't the only ones so inspired. I was an aspiring writer interning at the Washington Post sports section that summer. I'd grown up reading the sports pages every morning. That meant, for the most part, I grew up reading about the exploits of men, stories that were also usually written by men. But now, there were women on the front page. As an intern, my job was mostly to sort the mail and answer the phone. But before the quarterfinal game played in D.C., I was assigned to assist the reporter covering the game, one Stephen Goff.
I remember that game because the U.S. team was losing.
Right. I mean, that was the Brandy's own goal.
Yeah.
Which is how I found myself clutching my notebook in the mix zone after the game, summoning the courage to ask Julie Foudy a question. And that's why I still have a copy of Newsweek in my closet with the picture of Chastain in her black sports bra on the cover. I actually asked Chastain about how she came to take off her jersey in that moment.
Do you ever imagine your celebration or...
No.
Do you ever think about pulling off your shirt in front of 90,000 people?
No.
It was just
but I will be honest and say that we, yes, you know, we train in Florida, so we had a lot of post-practice time where we'd all be in our sports bras doing, you know, extra work, you know, working on free kicks.
So it just came naturally. Of course, she never imagined doing it while winning a World Cup.
The thought of scoring in a World Cup final, I mean, and then for it to go to the fifth penalty kick and then that be me and win the game, I mean, come on. You almost can't write that.
The script ended as it should, as the way the public thinks it should, and how different it would have been had we not.
Julie Foudy would agree that the U.S. women's victory in 1999 was not this magical turning point for women's sports the way it's sometimes made out to be. But it did change a lot of things.
We clearly wouldn't have been on the cover of all those magazines, and you don't have the iconic Brandy image of her strength and, you know, biceps and sports bra. And so it's a very different day for women in history.
A sample from Upon Further Review from Slate Media. Join the Upon Further Review team as they speculate on alternative sports realities. Available right now on WVXU's Podcast Central. This week's local podcast feature is as Cincinnati as it gets. Playing off of one of Cincinnati's nicknames, Porkopolis, hosts Lindsay Kraling and Justin Williams bring you Podopolis, a very Cincinnati podcast. For out-of-towners and locals alike, Podopolis is a podcast showcasing all things Cincinnati, from Skyline to the Reds to Taste of Cincinnati and everything in between. It's a great way to learn more about the city you live in, or if you don't live here, it's a great way to learn more about the future home for you. You can trust Lindsay and Justin. They're very Cincinnati people. Take a listen to this clip from a recent episode of Podopolis called Talk Midwestern to Me. The episode covers a wide variety of Cincinnati topics like FC Cincinnati, Bunbury Music Festival, unconventional Memorial Day celebrations, and much more. In this clip, Justin and Lindsay discuss their experiences with the recent announcement of FC Cincinnati's new status as a Major League Soccer team.
All of the things that we assumed throughout this whole process were true. The bid was theirs. They had to get the stadium to make it happen. They pushed it through and got it to work, and now they're going to be in Major League Soccer. So, you know, everything that they wanted happened. And I would say that a lot of fans wanted it. It didn't always happen the way I think people wanted it to happen or mm-hmm. in the fashion that it happened. But it all ended out coming out correctly. But the event itself was interesting. I feel like we have two different perspectives.
Yeah.
So let's hear yours.
So, you know, we were out of the country when the announcement broke. So it was my understanding that each supporters group got allotted a certain number of tickets. Mm-hmm. So we just missed that opportunity, and I had chalked it up as whatever. That sucks, but we'll miss it, and I'll go to Fountain Square and watch or something.
Yeah, so they
some kind of event.
Very quickly, like, hit capacity. They had to give out tickets for this. It was by invite only, as far as I understand the Ryan Geist thing.
Allegedly.
Yes. And then they basically set up like a watch party at Fountain Square because they were overrun with
sure.
requests, which was yeah. totally makes sense.
So
I get it.
The Fountain Square thing was going to be completely open to the public. Of course, that space allows for essentially no capacity, right? I mean, you can't fit a million people
sure.
there. But so we were offered tickets late yesterday morning, and, you know, hey, let's go. So took off work a little early, not a ton early. I've got to work to pay for my season tickets. But anyway, so we went, and we took the streetcar.
So what time
up.
Did you get there?
We got there at 5.
Okay.
Maybe a few minutes before.
The event started at 5:30, but the doors opened at 3.
Allegedly. I mean, they were, even Ryan Geist is tweeting about this at 1 p.m.
People were lined up outside.
They were taking pictures of people inside.
Yeah, it was wild.
Anyhow, well, we didn't even know until I heard somebody working tell somebody behind us they weren't even letting anyone anywhere but the rooftop anymore. And I looked at my husband and I was just like, oh, shit. I was already not happy at that point. So we got corralled like cattle up to the rooftop where it was hot as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I hate this time of year because it's just sweaty and gross. So they were, you know, they gave out tickets but were over capacity, which I think is just bullshit to begin with. So I wasn't very happy about that. Of course, I probably sound like a brat, but I don't care. You know, I don't, you know, dedicate a lot of my life to supporting this club to get corralled to the rooftop like cattle. So I'm not happy about how the ticketing situation was handled. And even I understand that they do give out so many tickets and there is a chance that they'll go over because they expect people to not go.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, I would love for them to have given some kind of update on social media so we wouldn't have wasted our time taking off work early and busting our asses to get up there only for them to be like, sorry, you can't actually watch this event that, you know, you've been waiting 18 months for.
Sure.
And I'd much have rather watched at Fountain Square.
A sample of Podopolis, a podcast about Porkopolis. Discover the majesty of the Queen City with Podopolis, available right now on WVXU's Podcast Central. It's chart time, where we look at what new podcasts are breaking through on the Apple Podcast charts via iTunescharts.net. Well, several new podcasts are starting to sizzle just in time for the dog days of summer. The first is from none other than Oprah. It's Oprah's Masterclass, the podcast. Hear the greatest life lessons of some of the most respected and renowned actors, musicians, public figures, and athletes handpicked by Oprah. In their own words, Jay-Z, Justin Timberlake, Ellen DeGeneres, Shaq, Reba, Dwayne Johnson, Jane Fonda, just to name a few that share what they've learned about life and their own insights into their personal stories. It's Oprah's Masterclass, and that should be on your summer listening list. Also at number six now, but on its way to the top, is the new podcast, Hysteria. Political commentator and comedy writer Aaron Ryan is joined by a bi-coastal squad of opinionated, mouthy women to discuss news, politics, and cultural stories that affect women's lives from serious to absurd. Women, 51% of the population and 100% of this podcast, Hysteria, just released a couple of weeks ago and on its way to the top of the Apple Podcast charts. That wraps up this episode of Start Here, WVXU's Discovery Podcast. And speaking of discovery, astronomical discovery, that is, you want to check out our newest original podcast, Looking Up, with Dean Regas and Anna Heyman. Dean's the outreach astronomer at the Cincinnati Observatory and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers and author of the book Facts from Space. Anna's the observatory's director of development with an innate curiosity about the cosmos. That's Looking Up, now at WVXU.org. And if you're turning into a podcast junkie and just can't get enough, try these two new discovery resources. NPR's The Big Listen with Laura Ober. You get an audio peek into great storytelling podcasts. And for a more blog-like written review and recommendation, NPR has Earbud.fm. They use unique categories to help you discover podcasts with things like advice, do it like a lady, and big ideas. And of course, Jim Nolan, Kevin Reynolds, and the WVXU staff feature our favorites on Podcast Central at WVXU.org. That's where we'll add your recommendations if you just email us at podcast@WVXU.org or call 513-294-8030 and leave us a voicemail. I'm Trip Eldridge for WVXU, and thank you for choosing to start here.